Have you ever heard women say, if my husband were to do this, then I could finally show up like this? Or I can only be more feminine if he fill in the blank. What if all those TikTok videos telling you how men should first change before you can finally be your best self are a scam? What if I told you that you actually have all of the agency to inspire your man to be a leader who is connected, loving, and showing up for you? We all love to be the victim. We love to feel helpless because it means we don't have to take responsibility for how we are showing up and for our situation. In this episode, I'm joined by Kelly Kama, who takes us through her personal journey of being a blue-haired, man-hating lesbian to now being a submissive, empowered wife. She teaches what has transformed her life and through her coaching and program supports women in facing their aversions, fears, and traumas with men to recognizing how they may have been shut off from receiving love, receiving relationship, and even being in their femininity. On this little journey, we are going to learn how a woman can express her needs and actually be heard by her partner, and also how to revive what might feel like a hopeless situation. We'll talk about how a woman is just like a peach and why marriage isn't and shouldn't be all about love. Thanks for joining me on Born to Know, the podcast that brings you conversations with experts and thought leaders in every field to peel back the layers of this epic world we live in and see where choice really resides within each of us every day. We are all born to know and to live as our most authentic and liberated selves. Hey, Kelly, thank you so much for being here with me today. I'm so excited to chat with you. I love what you're up to, and I just want to jump right in to understanding your arc and how you've arrived at this place of supporting and guiding women in what I think is like a return to their inner knowing. Seems like we've forgotten along the way, and you're here kind of rekindling that light that's inside all of us. And so, yeah, first of all, I want to know how you're doing. I know you just moved. A lot of big changes for you in the last 6 months, which is super exciting. How are you doing?
Well, I'm really good. Yeah, we just moved. Me, my husband and I just moved from Bali all the way to Austin. I've been in Bali for the last 4.5 years, and I'm really happy to be back in the U.S. I grew up outside of Chicago, so it just feels like being home, even though I've never lived in Austin. So even though it was a big transition and move, it also feels very comfortable and just good and settling to be here. So I'm really just feeling very grateful. Yeah. And thank you for having me. I also wanted to say I'm excited to connect with you. I've followed you for a while, and I love what you share about birth and femininity and all the things. So, and I love the way our worlds collide as well. So I'm excited to talk about that today.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. As we were chatting before this conversation, I realized there's actually so many things that like I often don't talk about with a lot of people, but I was like, oh, she's into that too. And she knows about that too. And it makes so much sense to me. So yeah, let's jump in. I'm really interested in like everyone's hero's journey. And it sounds like from what I've listened in on with you is that you went through this arc in your process, you know, to where you are today, like so many of us do. But it really, for me, is like this alchemical story of being in one belief system or being in one framework. And then I guess there were elements that inspired you to start to transform and metamorphosize and step into this journey, which is now what you're supporting women with as well. So I'd just love to hear about how you landed where you are now and what lights you up about what you're doing.
Yeah, I'd love to share. It's been quite an arc. And definitely like an old version of myself would not believe that I teach about loving men or being in your femininity, because that just used to repel me. I'll back up very far, you know, all the way back to my childhood. I can remember just this deep yearning to be in love and be in a relationship. And so much of my life, I just sought that. And I tried to be so many different ways to get the love I was looking for from boys in school. And yeah, just tried to be the cool girl, the girl who didn't have any needs, And I got into situationships. And really for the first, like when I look back to like high school and college, I was really in that world of being in situationships, not asking for anything and not knowing how to communicate. You know, in my family, the norm was sweeping things under the rug. Loved my family so much, right? But didn't learn many healthy relationship skills within my family. So getting into relationships was just really tough. And I thought that I would find all my answers in relationships, right? Like if I was just love and someone loved me back, everything would be okay. So I was just on this full mission to find that thing. And that led to a lot of heartbreak and pain. And it got to a point in maybe when I was like 18, 19, that I was just struggling so much with men and boys before that, that I thought, oh, well, maybe if I date women, this will all be resolved. It's probably because I'm gay. I just need to date women. I was wrong all along. And there were things that led me to get there as well. Like it wasn't just a momentary decision. I think I'd always been a little bit more tomboy. So then people would like had asked me if I was gay. So then there was like this culmination of like, well, maybe this is the answer here, right?
Right. There's like a lot of evidence building up over time.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, let's give it a shot. And so yeah, from like 20 to 25, I only dated women and I got engaged to a woman. I just thought that was going to be my life. And I really settled into that identity. You know, I shaved my head. I wore like baggy clothes. You know, people would sometimes think I was a man from the back because I looked so masculine. And that's also where I felt very safe in that energy, that role. You know, I remember I lived in Chicago at the time. And, you know, when I shaved my head, people wouldn't catcall me anymore. I wouldn't be, I think hit on in the same way, although I got attention in a different way. But I felt like people saw me as tough. So I felt safe in that. So that was a whole journey within that. But then the truth of my relationship, that I was engaged to this woman, is that the dynamics of our relationship were just more toxic than actually I'd ever experienced before. You know, so my answer in my mind of just, oh, I'll just date women and it'll be fine, was not true in the end. And I was really suffering in that relationship. And I was just very passive. And I just wanted to make her happy. And I thought, if I can just make her happy, then the relationship's going to be good. And there was just, many other dynamics that didn't work about that. But then underneath that, I started having dreams about being with men again and just felt this inner desire that I did not want to have that was like leading me back to wanting to be with men, which was so terrifying, right? Like ruining my whole identity I just built up over the last 5 years. Yeah, just anyways, my relationship with that woman fell apart just because of our toxic dynamics and also because these feelings I was feeling. And thank God that it did. Thank God we didn't get married. At that point, I just became humbled enough. I guess maybe that's not even the right word. I think I got to my own rock bottom in that moment of being like, I really want to be in a relationship still. Like I really want a healthy relationship and I don't know how. It was this moment of like, I surrender. I do not know the answer. So at that point, one of my friends invited me to this retreat that she was holding and it was all about femininity. Prior to that, I was so resistant about femininity because what I had learned femininity was when I was young was like wearing push-up bras and having blonde hair and being pretty. You know, that was kind of
like a sexualized perception of the woman is what you equated with femininity.
Totally. And it was all about getting the attention of boys, you know? And so I was like, well, I don't want that. And then, so I thought it was like just antiquated information that femininity even existed. And like, I was just like, no, this is not relevant to me. But I had gotten to that point of surrender where I was like, I'm willing to actually try anything at this point because I just don't know. And so then doing that retreat and then many others after, I realized like, wow, this is something that I didn't know anything about femininity and that I really need and want and feel really gravitated towards. And so that just began my journey of learning how to heal my relationship with men and be in healthy relationships and connect to my femininity in a way that felt empowered, not passive, not sexualized, all those things. And then, through that journey, I met my husband. We met about 4 years ago. And got married 3 years later. And I'm so grateful for what I learned. I mean, for so many reasons, and we'll talk about it today. But even when I look at my relationship with him, I know that if I didn't know this about the differences between men and women or how to respect a man, our relationship would never have progressed the way that it has. And not just knowing how to respect him, but also know how to use feminine communication to share my needs and my feelings, my desires, our relationship would have 100% fell apart. And so I'm just deeply grateful. And I'm passionate about this because it's never what I thought I'd teach or do or talk about. And it was exactly what I needed. And I see that a lot of women do want this, but they don't know how to have it. And so I just want to share what I've learned. And I really like making it practical and doable, as opposed to, like, sometimes I think when we talk about femininity and masculinity, it can be a little like ethereal or, you know, not grounded. And so I do my best to make it grounded and help women walk that path for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true what you're saying, because a lot of the women that I come into contact with just in my personal life and the communities that I lead and women that I teach and train, it's like they're burnt out on this, you know, concept of the masculine and the feminine, right? It's like, oh, well, this person says if I do this or that I feel into this, then I'll get this response. Or if I guide him to do this, then he'll open me up. And it's like, there's so much, I think, confusion right now. And there's a lot of people talking about, like, well, if you just rest in this, then he will rise in that. And I don't know, there's just formulas, right, that I think are leaving women really confused. And a lot of them haven't mastered what I think might be the foundational steps of this process, which is a reconnection with themselves, right? Like, you hit a rock bottom moment, which many of us do, not just once, but multiple times. And when we basically, like, supplicate, we say, like, I surrender to you, right? Which, I mean, we surrender to God and we say, I'm available to receive whatever I need to receive because I'm done with this. Like, I'm sick of this story. I'm sick of hearing myself in this story. And it's almost like you're on the outside looking in. So we get to that point. And then, right, you received an opportunity to go to this retreat, which started to scratch the surface of perhaps the direction that you went in. And so what are these foundational steps that a woman can do before even attempting to engage in a relationship? And if she's already in a relationship, right, many of us wake up one day in marriage and say, something has to change because I feel unsatisfied and I can see my partner is deeply unsatisfied, so I'm going to take it into my own hands. What is the first thing, would you say, that you did or a woman can do that's accessible and it's not about the other person?
Yeah, I love what you said about that the journey does start inside. It starts within, with connecting to yourself. And I think just to back up for a second, because I think the world of learning about femininity can be really confusing. And what I like to teach and what's helped me understand it is recognizing how, and this is like an analogy for the feminine, is that the healthy feminine is like a ripe peach. I learned this from one of my teachers, and it's really helpful because it's like a ripe peach is soft and sweet on the outside, right? Gentle, soft, sweet on the outside. But then in the middle, there's the pit, which is solid and strong. And basically that's it. And has wisdom as well, right? The pit of a peach even, right? The wisdom to grow another tree. And the feminine is the same. So on the outside, what we lead with, maybe like in the world, the healthy feminine, it can be soft and sweet and kind and gentle, like those qualities that are probably automatically associated to the feminine. But then inside, it's so important that we have that internal strength and wisdom and discernment and ability to voice our needs when it's hard or move through conflict or regulate ourselves, that I think sometimes gets lost in the femininity conversation. And it's just so important because we actually can't be soft and vulnerable if we don't have internal strength, actually. And so, you know, I think sometimes the world teaches us, you know, not inside this work, but like outside when we're taught to be independent women and not need a man, it kind of teaches us to only focus on that pit. Like, only focus on the strength and, you know, be strong. And then that leaves women burnt out. But then sometimes in the femininity world, it's like we take pit out and then we just have like this mushy soft, it almost gets kind of rotten, like sweetness, softness, and passivity also. that also isn't healthy femininity. So I think it's finding that healthy balance where you can have both is so important. Just to give an overview of the way that I see it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I wonder like how we cultivate that pit, right? Because I do come into contact with women who maybe are just all peach, right? And there's no internal framework. So they often feel maybe exhausted, overrun, don't have a sense of self. The discernment isn't there. They're fawning all the time, right? Trying to please, trying to be loved and liked. And they even outsource decision-making very often and say, I don't even know what I want. I don't even know what I would choose in this situation. I can't even keep track of time. I can't keep appointments. I can't, right? It's just this, you know, really uncontained feminine experience. And so how does the woman strengthen and cultivate that pit inside the peach and also create her own containment?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think oftentimes, while there's multiple reasons that could be missing, I think it could be a lack of knowledge. Like when I think of myself, I was very much uncontrolled, kind of like this peach without the pit. That was my pattern when I was younger, especially. And there was multiple things missing because there was a lack of knowledge. Like I didn't have discernment. I didn't know what boys or men were like actually healthy to date, you know, how to actually communicate. So I think that there can be a lack of like knowing. I also didn't know how to keep a calendar. I didn't know how to kind of actually even contain a lot of things in my life. And then also with that, like a lack of knowledge, or there can be a wound underneath where it's like, you know, because then there were other times where I did know my needs. I did know that I wanted to be in a relationship with these boys I was in situationships with, but I didn't want to lose love. So I didn't want to be abandoned. And so I had to look at that internal wound to heal and learn the skills that I was missing to create internal containment.
Yeah, I think that's something that comes up a lot is women say, okay, well, now I'm aware of the wounding. I'm aware that I stay in toxic dynamics because the fear of losing connection, the fear of being abandoned is so much worse. It feels like death. It's so much worse than being in this, you know, stonewalling, silent treatment, tug of war. It's so much worse than that. So I'll settle for that toxic dynamic over losing the connection and being alone, right? So once a woman becomes aware that she's participating in this dynamic, what can she do, right? And I know like in my containers with the doulas that I train, I talk about reparenting the inner girl. So it's all about rebuilding trust with her, you know, and this is a very kind of niche thing I would say, and it's specific to what we talk about. But what would you say to, you know, any woman who's like, okay, I'm aware that there's a wound. I'm aware that my husband triggers it when, you know, he doesn't check in. He's out and he says he's going to call at 4 and then it's 4:30. And now, like, you know, I'm feeling surges in my body and I'm wondering where he is and I feel disrespected and I feel like, right, the abandonment kicks in. So now that the wound is there, what are some practices to say this is not him? Could be he's in the middle of a call, could be he's still at work, could be that his phone, you know, many things, right? What can a woman do in that situation when she's become aware of the wounds and now it's on her, right, to alchemize them? Like what just some modalities, maybe some ideas?
Yeah. So as far as looking at healing the wound, one place that we can look that often is connected is our relationship with our dads. I know that one is a big one for me, right? Because it's like if we don't get the love that we need or want from our dad, then we go out and we look for men who are like our dad or men who aren't like our dad. And we try to get that love like unconsciously. And so going right back to the relationship with your dad and seeing what's in there or if there was any abandonment there or wounds that need to be healed there. So yeah, and I think that process can be unique to each woman, but that was definitely something that I needed to go through and something that I got to recognize like, wow, I am just dating my dad again and again. I'm trying to fix men because I couldn't fix my dad. I'm trying to make him stay because I felt abandoned by him emotionally. And I looked at that, yeah, like you said, reparenting the little inner girl. I got to go through the process of meeting that need myself, right? Because when we become adults, it's like really only we can meet some of those really core needs that like our inner children need. right? And if we're trying to grasp that from other people, it's we're never going to get it in its entirety like we want. And so, yeah, I think inner child work is really important around looking at our relationship with our dad. And then the other thing that I think is important is to recognize, you know, if you are in a relationship where you're experiencing stonewalling or, and you've been passive and, you know, you've got all these dynamics going on that don't feel good, that you don't want anymore, it doesn't automatically mean that when you start doing this, like the relationship is going to end. I think that can sometimes be the fear, like, I don't want to start communicating, like, because I don't want to lose this love. But actually, I think some relationships might end and you might discover that you're not compatible or maybe your partner's not willing. But I think in many dynamics, the truth is that when you soften and change and heal, your partner will shift as well. Like and you don't do that to like manipulate him to change, but by you changing, you do change the dynamic of the relationship. And likely your partner wants a better relationship too. So there's just so much healing and connection and intimacy that's possible when you start to develop that internal pit, if that's the part, or like heal this stuff.
Yeah. And I would say very often what I see is that maybe you see this too, because I know you and your husband both do very similar work respectively and with your own unique approach and perspective. But what I see a lot is that women feel a lot of resentment in their relationships more often. And, you know, maybe long-term relationships, it starts to build where they say, you know, he comes home from work and he gets on his phone or he takes a shower and he gets on the couch and here I am slaving over the stove. And, you know, the resentment is building. Why does he get to chill and why don't I, you know? And so I ask women, like, what are you doing to stoke your own inner fire? What are you doing to turn, you know, the volume up on your own pleasure? And why is this person not allowed to be in their pleasure? Why is it that, you know, because you haven't cultivated that in yourself that they're not allowed to? And so do you see that when women start to feed their own pleasure, that actually ends up attracting their partner to come into their space more, to want to engage with them more?
Yeah. And I think when women aren't focused on themselves in like filling up their own cup, then they end up putting that weight on their partner. And that's a really heavy weight for him to bear. And that's probably going to cause him to shrink down or to step away, be like, I don't know what's happening, you know. But if you really focus on filling up your own cup and being able to come to your relationship with joy and grace for yourself and for him, that's definitely going to invite him to lean in, to show up more, to want to. Because I think men, something I learned that I just love and sticks with me always is that men want to make us happy. Most men want to make us happy. And when we're not happy, they think they're doing something wrong. So that might cause them to kind of like slink away, right? And so
they don't want to be rejected, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so important that like when they see us being happy, they're like, oh, amazing. Like I want to make her even more happy, you know, or I'm winning with her. Like I'm doing something that's having her be happy. So it invites him to be even more of that.
So would you say, you know, I'll just jump into this now. There are women I work with, you know, with couples in their preconception, fertility phase, or in their pregnancy, or even in their postpartum. And so I come into contact with relationship dynamics, and I'm by no means a relationship counselor, but I am doing other types of work with them. And some of them experience really kind of intense ruptures in their relationship, you know, whether it's infidelity, whether it's, you know, the husband stops saying, I love you, for whatever reason, he starts spending more time at work, or she does something to break trust. Can people recover from this? Can relationships recover from this? And if, you know, the woman is going to do the work to heal and change, and, you know, she can't expect him to, you know, she can't give him a list of to-dos, right? And say, go watch this video, go take this class, you need to fix this, right? What can she do? How can they slowly rebuild that trust?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible to rebuild. And, you know, that's no small thing after something like infidelity. And I would say that's not my forte of expertise. So I don't know, you know, I don't know a ton about that specific journey. But what I'd say is that I always like to bring it back to this analogy of there being two sides of the street in a relationship, right? So there's your side of the street and then there's his side of the street. And so while it can be really easy, especially if your partner is not showing up for you or you don't have a need met or there is infidelity, it sometimes can be very easy to like point to his side of the street and be like, you know, you need to clean this up. These are your problems. It's easier to see his side of the street, right? But that doesn't work. As we all know, anyone who's ever tried, you can't fix him, you can't change him. And when you try, yeah, it's not a good dynamic. So what you can do is look at your side of the street, right? Because we all have a part to play in the dynamic that we have, right? And that's not to blame at all, right? But it's actually what I found in that is so much clarity and also empowerment. Like, oh, I'm not a victim to him just spending too much time at work. There's actually something. Maybe there's something that I've played into to create this dynamic, or definitely, if not that, there's something I can do to help change that. Yeah. So I think always looking at your part, and that doesn't mean that there's not a time when you can also share about something he's done or like an impact he's had on you. But I just always say start with your part.
Yeah. Start with your part. I'm so about self-sovereignty, right? Because it's like there's so many self-created prisons every day in all facets of life. And this seems to be one of them for many women. It's like, you know, he doesn't give me enough. I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. I don't, you know. So what are these tools for self-sovereignty? One of them is looking at your side of the street. What impact are you having? What part are you playing in this dynamic? You know, and if he were to never change, would you still choose him? Right. And what would you do, you know, within your own power to shift things? And so, you know, moving into that, what is another piece to this is that women want to be seen, they want to be heard, right? But do they have the capacity to receive? And so I've heard women say, I'm so bad at receiving, right? What does that mean? And how can the woman create an opportunity to receive so that her husband, her man, actually has a place to put what he wants into her, you know, pour into her, right?
No, that's so true. I think it's an incredibly important skill to be able to receive. And yeah, I think what blocks women from receiving, sometimes it can be a feeling of unworthiness. You know, it's like if someone tried to give you a present and, or if someone tried to, well, I guess that this could be a better thing. Like if someone tried to pay you for like mowing the lawn, but you didn't mow the lawn, you'd be like, no, that wasn't me. And so it's similar with like unworthiness. If someone tries to like pay you a compliment and you don't feel beautiful or you don't feel like you deserve that, you're going to push it away. And I think that's the other thing that I've come to understand about men is that they really want to give. They're providers, you know, and they want to provide help and they want to, yeah, provide for us in many different ways. And when we don't receive it, they can feel like they're not needed in our life. And men need to be needed, right? So that's so important. And yeah. So I'm sorry, did I answer your question? What was your question about receiving?
Why would a woman say she's bad at receiving? Because, you know, there are women that say like, I don't feel that he compliments me enough, or he never buys me a gift, or he never, you know, like they're wanting the presence, right? They're wanting the connection. And so for some women, their love language is receiving gifts, you know, it is being seen. Then I wonder, are they even available to receive? Because I do feel that men are always giving in their own way, right? Like men seem to be very more prone to acts of service, let's say. And so for them, you know, they repaired the thing in the kitchen. And so they feel they've given something, but she's like, oh, I want to receive words of affirmation, let's say, and I'm not getting any of that, you know? And so is it a matter, if we're talking about tools for self-sovereignty, for a woman to actually start to look at the things he is doing and realize that this is a love language? And can she receive that first? And if she's able to receive that, can then she say, you know, I'd love to be told I'd love to be told that I look great today, right? Like or something, right? Like how can she first open herself up to receptivity and then express the things that she wants without nagging? Right? It seems like that might be a way to do it.
I love that you said that. Yeah, because I think that's such a big piece is to, you know, recognize where your man is already giving, right? And that's a piece of respecting him, I think, as a man, is receiving what he is providing. And each man is going to be providing what he wants to and what he can. So that might look different, because I think it could be easy to fall into, well, he's not providing this thing and I need this. It's like, okay, put that to the side for a moment. We'll get to that later. But what is he providing, right? Is he changing the light bulb in the kitchen? Is he taking out the garbage? Is he a really good listener? You know, every man's going to have their own way of providing. Is he providing financially? And learn how to get into a state of recognizing that and appreciating that. You know, especially when women sometimes aren't getting our needs met, we're like, well, I don't want to appreciate that thing because I'm not having my needs met in this other area. But like backwards thinking, because recognizing where he is showing up, giving him appreciation, like speaking appreciation to him is going to help, yeah, build the bridge to getting that other need met as well. But you have to start there with recognizing him and appreciating him.
Yeah, like setting him up for success, right? And him feeling good and feeling inspired to do more of the things.
Yeah, and then the second thing you said about, okay, so then what about that need that's not being met? So that's a really good chance to practice feminine communication.
Yes, tell me more about it.
All right, so feminine communication, if we think back to that peach, it's really important that it has both parts, where it is that internal clarity, that sense of worth, of like, I can have this. And sometimes it can be a journey to get to that, as we said, but just to keep this answer simple, it's like having that in the fraternal clarity of like what you want and what you need, and having the strength to communicate that, and then being able to deliver that with respect and with softness. And so what that means, you know, it doesn't mean you need to like speak in a soft voice it doesn't mean you need to be inauthentic. You know, I think maybe sometimes that is what can be understood from that, but that's absolutely not what I'm saying. It's coming to him with love, with appreciation, and just with a desire, not coming to him with resentment and anger and like, why haven't you done this?
Would you be willing to give an example of like an effective and non-effective way to communicate a need?
Yeah. Okay. So what might be a need? Would you have one that's top of mind, or I can come up with a random one?
Oh, I don't know. We could say something like, you know, you've cooked every meal that week and like you would love, you know, just like for him to do the dishes one of the nights, even though it's not typically like your dynamic to do that. Maybe that's the thing.
Okay, great. So an ineffective way to communicate that would be to say, you never do the dishes. I'm always slaving away in the kitchen. Why are you so lazy? I do everything in this house. Obviously, that is not effective. So, and it's like, I can understand where there could be that feeling of like resentment or anger in the relationship. But I have a lot of food analogies apparently, but like I like to think of an onion. Okay. So it's like, that's kind of the outer layer of the onion. You might have resentment and anger, and okay, maybe that's valid, you know, but like if we peel back the layers of that onion and we find the center thing, there's actually just a tender desire in there. So that's what I really guide women. And then like, okay, let's peel back the layers. Okay, feel resentful, got it. What's underneath the resentment? And then we go until we get to the tender desire. So with that being said, then the effective way to communicate that would be to just share the tender desire. Would just be to say, you know, hey, babe, I would really love if you would do the dishes tonight. Are you open to that? And that's it. Share the desire and then ask the question. Because I think the question creates space for him to, it's not like a demand. It's an invitation.
An invitation, right. And so what happens if he's like, no, I'm super exhausted. I've been working all day.
Yeah, I think that that'd be hard to hear, you know, and I would encourage women to like breathe and take a moment to maybe allow their nervous system to take a breath or like feel how they're feeling in that. And you know, I think a big piece of feminine communication is communicating feelings from a personally responsible place. So I think what I would respond to that is probably first understanding, right? Understanding like, yeah, I get that you're really exhausted and I appreciate even adding appreciation. Like I appreciate how hard you work. Like I provide for our family and I love that about you. And, you know, then maybe it depends on the specific nuance, but it could be like, what, you know, you could say, I really would just love some help, you know, in the kitchen. I feel tired as well. What can we do tonight to work together to have this work for both of us? You know, so you can just kind of ask for help and see what he comes up with. How might he lead you guys to find a solution that works for both of you.
Yeah, because he might say, you know what, let's just go to bed and we'll do it in the morning. Or I'll take care of it in the morning or something like that, right? There are a lot of possibilities, right? And I would say that if there's a rejection of that invitation, when she speaks from that more tender place, that it could be that there's another onion there where it's like there have been so many nagging demands for so long that his system might kind of be in shock from hearing that tender desire. And he might be like, no. But then he might be like, well, okay, that was different, right? So it's a work in progress.
Totally. And it takes time to change that dynamic. Yeah, you said it perfectly. Like if he has that imprint of you're going to get angry, then you maybe automatically get defensive. So if you could just keep coming to it with softness and strength of like, oh, I do really need help here and I'd love your guidance or help. And you can keep coming to him with softness, then that's where long-term, likely the dynamic and all that communication stuff can change.
Yeah. And so this is actually kind of jumping back to something that I thought of when you were speaking earlier about your journey and what happens when we realize one day, like we don't have a blueprint for healthy relationship. We just like, we're, you know, we've been like adulting for a while and perhaps we've been married for some time or we're engaged or whatever it is, or we, you know, we've had a series of relationships, perhaps depending on, you know, where we come from culturally or religiously, but we realize I don't actually know how to do this. How can a woman start to learn?
Yeah. Well, I think really practically you can find relationships around you who seem to have some of the things you're looking for, you know, whether that be, I don't know, a coach you might see online or just someone that you have in your immediate or further out circle, family, friend or something, and really just seeking to learn from them, asking questions or see or just witnessing like what is it that they seem to do that I can learn from or reaching out for some connection or learning from them. I think that that's what I did. Even when I think of that retreat that I went to with my friend, it's two women and one of them is in an amazing marriage that I've always looked up to. And so I just kept learning from her. And then I went over here and I learned from these people who I felt inspired by. And so we can't figure it out on our own, you know? And I think that's really important to seek mentorship and learning. And that could be in a book, a podcast like this as well.
Yeah. I mean, historically marriage looked very different, right? Like we often didn't choose our partner. I mean, up until what, like 150 years ago, we were not choosing. We were not marrying for love or compatibility. It's very often a business transaction or what would serve the family in a sense, for the most part. And in many parts of the world, it still functions like that. And so we grow up, we're in a time now where we have more agency in selecting partnership. And I would say almost to a fault in a sense, because now we've kind of gone into this far end of the spectrum where we are looking for connection and relationship, you know, online and, you know, with various dating apps. Not that you can't find a high quality, high value woman or high value man, you know, online. However, it has kind of spawned this culture of like, well, I'm going to kind of hop around and I'm not exactly sure what my values are, but I'm just looking for somebody that I might have some chemistry with. And we kind of align on a few things, you know? And so I know many women and men who, you know, spend years, you know, just kind of hopping from thing to thing without clarity on exactly what they're looking for, you know? And so we're in an interesting time. And, you know, I kind of observe this from afar. And I also see that people now resort to things, and I don't know the whole history, right? I don't know the whole history of this concept, but there's an entire community of, you know, polyamorous relationships, right? And that this is the more like elevated way to participate in healthy adult relating. And, you know, that we need to make space for the man's natural biology, which is to have variety. And if the man just has variety, he will be content with his main partner. And this is the way to, you know, this is the more realistic approach. And so there's so much information now. And to be a young woman or a young man stepping into the time of wanting to commit to long-term partnership, like there's so much like information out there that I feel like is it's almost like a minefield, you know? And so what would you say to that? I personally believe that, you know, monogamy is like the biggest spiritual boot camp that there is, you know, mostly because it's like having a house of being in a house of mirrors all the time. And so, yeah, what can young people do who are, you know, embarking on this journey? I know I threw a lot at you there, but yeah, how do we read through this with discernment?
Yeah, no, it's such a good question. And, you know, okay, so even if we look at other cultures or like back in the day when spouses were chosen for us and it was kind of like a family decision, you know, like your dad would suss them out and have a, you know, a meeting with your mom. And then they'd say, okay, this works. And you guys are going to be together forever. And there's something, I think there's something, and I'm so glad, you know, it's not like that anymore. I love that we get to choose ourselves and focus on love and compatibility. But I think there's something that we can kind of learn from that. And it's this expectation that this is not going to be easy. We're not always going to love each other. There is logistical pieces that are important, right? You said it was like a business transaction. And there's a part of marriage, and I mean, I'm newly married, so I wouldn't say I'm no expert in marriage, but there's a part of relationships for sure that we need to take it into account, like almost like it is a business transaction. And not only that, it's not definitely not only that, but there's something in that that's wise, right? Like really taking into the account the logistics and the compatibility and what each person wants so that you're not just running off of like love. Cause it's kind of like the peach where it's like all feminine with no containment. It's chaotic if we're only focusing on how we feel. But then if we're only focusing on what's logistical, then it's, yeah, it's just the pit of the peach. So I think it's really important to have both. And yeah, as far as polyamory and that, I've definitely gotten sucked down that road of think is the most evolved way, or that's the best way to be. And the more I kind of explored that, like in my relationship with Matt, there were just little moments that we had. There was like this innate sense of like, no, this does not feel good. I don't like this. And when I first felt that, I was like, okay, I need to work through that. And then I recognized, no, I don't actually, I want monogamy. There's a reason monogamy works. And I can listen to that internal clarity. And I would just say like around the biological thing that there's a lot of biological urges that we do not listen to, right? Like when I have to pee, for example, and I'm out at the store, I don't just listen to my biological urge and pee in the middle of the aisle or whatever. Or when you're angry at someone, right? When we're angry at someone, sometimes there's like that urge, that like primal urge to like hit them, hurt them. We don't listen to that because that doesn't work in like society. You know, there's containment to stop us from doing that.
Because we have contracts and agreements.
Yeah, and those are good. Those are good things, right? It's like what makes the society work. And so I'd say the same thing is in marriage, like a man might have that biological urge, but I do think it's his responsibility to like navigate that and move through that. And yeah, like take responsibility for that piece and not just let that biological urge just like run his life. Because that's never going to, well, in my opinion, that's, and I think that that's backed up by like what we see in like what works in society at large. Like that doesn't work if he's doing that. So yeah. And I think that that's why when I think of like finding mentorship or finding people that you want to listen to for relationship advice, it's really important that you look at like the fruits of their relationship. And I know sometimes that can be hard to see on the internet or whatever. But if I think of the people that I hear talking about that, like polyamory and, you know, men following their biological urges or being allowed to cheat, and I look at their relationships or their families, I'm like, no, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good for the woman. I'm sure she's not happy with that. And at the end of the day, I don't want that.
Right. I mean, I don't know what happened. I clicked on a reel on Instagram, and because I watched it, I feel like now I'm being haunted. It's like this woman, and she has three husbands, and it, you know, I think she lives in Atlanta. I don't forget her name, but they all serve a different role. And she said, "I am so many women in one body, and you know, this is the partner that satisfies my, you know, courageous or my adventurous part that likes to travel, and then this is the one that satisfies the intellectual part, and this is the one that satisfies the, you know, the finances." And I was like, and then it was just like a cascade effect where I started seeing all of these dynamics. And it was totally alarming to me. Maybe most people are like privy to this, but I was just in shock that, you know, and then I remembered, you know, from my wonderful teacher who, you know, Om Rupani, that everyone has contracts and agreements. And if people are very clear with their contract and their agreement, what they're willing to do, not willing to do, and what they're open to trying, you know, and there's clarity on both ends, then people get into dynamics where everybody is clear, right? So then it's not cheating. It's, you know, we are both agreeing to this. And I wonder, you know, how long that can really go on, you know, because at the end of the day, women want to feel safe. And, you know, I don't know how safety is sustained in many of these dynamics. It's not, I have not an expert in that in any case, but yeah, I come back to the idea of contracts and agreements. And if, you know, there's certain rules in place and everybody knows, then okay, I guess it could work. And that's me trying to have, you know, compassion and understanding for these types of decisions. But even in monogamous relationship and marriages, a lot of people don't understand the concept of contracts and agreements, right? A lot of people don't even talk about how finances will go because it's uncomfortable. We all have money trauma on some level. So they'd rather avoid the subject than actually have a conversation about what they're willing to, not willing to, and okay with trying, you know? And then of course, with the monogamy piece, with having children, some people get into relationship and never discuss that one of them doesn't want to have children, one of them does, because some women think he'll change his mind over time. He'll eventually want, you know, to have a family, right? And so there's a lot of getting into these committed dynamics on what I call the fumes of hope, you know, that things will be different or it'll get addressed later, right? So what is this like fear of not addressing, not getting clear on contracts and agreements, not expressing the things that we need or want?
Yeah. Well, I think this is where we can get into, or definitely where I've gotten into at times, confusion about what it means to be feminine. That might not be the tie for everybody, but I see that a lot. Like, it's, you know, women saying, well, I want him to lead that conversation. I want him to bring that up. I want him to say that he wants marriage, or I want him to tell me when he's ready for a relationship. Meanwhile, women are just like strung along in like a situationship or strung along in a relationship that never leads to marriage. And they're just waiting, they're waiting, and they get resentful. And obviously that just goes downward from there. And so it's so important that women, that we practice. And this, for me at least, this has kind of gone against my, I don't know, my patterns, or maybe even like my biological urge to be safe. Because my urge to be safe would tell me, do not communicate anything that risks this relationship, right? But we kind of have to override that in order to have a conscious relationship. Because listen to that, if you want to have an unconscious relationship, because it's kind of like your unconscious thoughts are running you. So if you have a conscious relationship, you kind of have to overcome that and be willing to say, hey, I want this. I want marriage. I want kids. And I need to know if you're on the same page as me if we're going to keep moving forward in this relationship, right? And you can communicate that with so much love and respect for him, and also like strength and wisdom and clarity. And I think that when we don't do that as women, I mean, we rob ourselves of a lot, but then we even rob our partners of a lot. Because in my relationship, there was a time when, you know, when we were dating, he didn't know, my now husband, Matt, he didn't know if he wanted to be in a relationship with me, right? He kind of wanted to keep taking it slow and seeing how things went and seeing other people. And I got to a point of clarity. And because I'm in this practice that I'm talking about with you here, I knew I needed to put my foot down and, you know, share that I was 100% sure I wanted to be in a committed relationship, and that I actually needed that, because we had gotten to a level of connection and intimacy, and I was just like, wow, I'm really falling in love with him. Like, I need containment, and I'm going to stand for that. And so for him, he had to have a whole experience of coming to his yes, and he's told me this, like, what that had him do was step up. He's like, no woman has ever asked me to do that. And it was so cool, because when he did come to his yes, he was 2 feet in and never wavered, was just so like clear and there, and has been like that since that day. And so by me being clear, it forced him to step up, or not forced him. It invited him to step up, which he took the invitation. And our connection and relationship was so much better for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you have a similar, don't you have a similar story of that?
Oh my goodness. Yes, I do actually. My now husband, we went through quite some time of, you know, it was, marriage had been on the table, you know, but I think for him, he wasn't, you know, he'd been really burned before, I guess, let's just put it that way. And so wasn't sure if that was something he wanted to do. And so we took the time to get to know each other. And then I hit a point where I said, okay, I've reached my kind of like my internal time limit that I set. And, you know, I approached it with respect and totally from the heart. And I was like, I honor where you are. And this has been like an incredible journey so far. And at no point did I ever feel like I'm gonna, you know, I'm being mishandled or mistreated. I just hit a point where I said, this is like actually where I'd like my life to go now. And so you're welcome to step up or not. But there was so much work that I had been doing, you know, internally, because I'd been divorced 4 years before. And so in those 4 years, I took a lot of time to cultivate that pit, let's say, and to build the most important relationship in my life, which is the one with myself, you know. And so that was the only way that I was able to arrive at that moment where I was no longer self-betraying in order to keep connection. And I knew, you know, I knew he's an incredible man. And I knew like, okay, it's 50-50 right now. I'm going to say this. And he's either going to be like, all right, well, I'm going to go find someone else who's okay with one foot in, one foot out. Or he's going to say, okay, I'm stepping up. So I was prepared for either journey for myself. And yeah, and then we ended up getting married and, you know, the rest is history. But it was like, I mean, let's just say I couldn't believe that I'd gotten to that point, because considering my, you know, my trajectory since, you know, in my youth, I don't know that I'd ever drew a line in the sand like that.
Yeah, same. And I just know so many women who have similar stories of like, okay, I drew the line in the sand. I shared what I needed and wanted, and he did step up and he did want that too. And yeah, it's just so cool. So the evidence grows and grows.
The evidence like this really grows and grows. And I will be honest, I listened to this pastor. His name is R.C. Blakes. I don't know if you know who he is. He's incredible. And he has a whole program called Queenology. I didn't do the program, but I've listened to that man's every single YouTube video he's ever created. And it was like one of the soundtracks I had going for 4 years. And he really, I would say, like gave me the tools to be accountable. Like I learned a lot of accountability. I had learned it when I became a mother, you know, but the accountability and communicating when I'm accountable, taking responsibility and radical ownership over my behavior really was supported by him. So I just want to give him a little shout out, you know, and I'm not Christian, but I listen to a lot of different pastors because there's just so much wisdom there. And you know, anyway, so yeah, it was the radical responsibility for my side of the street. And, you know, if you're legitimized around what your heart desires, you're legitimized around these values that you have, the person's either going to come along with you or they're not, you know, and I'm not talking about compromise, right? There are moments where compromise happens, right? You have something that you're maybe willing to do or willing to try, and then there's a place to meet in the middle. But there are certain things that we just have, you know, heart stops around, and, you know, and it's, I think it's going to be different for every woman, right? And every man.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's important too, to know, yeah, this is like for those big things, I think, marriage, commitment, babies, like this is so important to have those lines in the sand, but for smaller things, yeah, you can find compromise, you can talk through it. Yeah. But I think that there's, if you're clear that you want babies and marriage and stuff like that, like there's no compromise there.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first meeting I ever had, like date I had with my husband, Kareem. We met up and someone had been trying to set us up for like 2 years even before, but we never met. And we finally met up and it was like, you know, it felt very much like an interview to me. And I was okay with that because yeah, there was an element of getting to know each other, but I was also like, you know, are you down with these five things? And he was like, oh, you know, and I wasn't being like a super assertive. I was being very curious and I was really speaking it from the heart. He was like, yeah, these things matter to me too. You know, and it's like, so then he, you know, had wrote out a list of values and things and shared it with me. And I'd never done that before. I had just never done that before. And it made a really big difference in having a lot of clarity in the relationship moving forward. You know, I was not interested in leaving a lot of unknowns, which I did for so long, you know, in past relationships, which leads to a lot of suffering and resentment, right?
Yeah, I love that you guys did that. Yeah, Matt and I did something similar when we were on the brink of getting engaged. We went through this whole list of questions of just future vision, compatibility, kids, you know, just everything, you know, down to our future. And like, and it was really needed, really helpful, right? That's where you almost get to have like those business-like decisions of like, are we on the same page? Because we need to know that.
Yeah. And that's why I say the dating culture sometimes can be really toxic right now and teaches us how to do these things. We have to seek out the mentorship. And I find that it's even more challenging for men than it is for women to seek out the mentorship. So in your program, Beloved, I'd love, you know, you've told me a little bit about it, but it sounds like women who are ready to transform, who are ready to receive, to rest in their femininity, to get a really clear understanding of that, are joining your program. And tell us a little bit about it. And is it women who are not yet in relationship, or it's women who are already in relationship, or it's everyone who is just ready to?
Yeah, so it's mostly women in relationship. And there's a few outliers, but I'll talk about that in a second. So basically, it's made for women who are just ready to soften into their femininity so that they can feel seen and safe and taken care of, which is the desire that so many women have. And inside the program, it's like we're really looking at transforming your part of the relationship, like how you've shown up as a partner, how you can soften and how you can be in devotion, how to respect your man, how to communicate in a feminine way. So kind of teaching all these skills that we've talked about today. And then even inviting your partner in for a workshop as well. There's my husband's a part of it a little bit to bring in some of the masculine, bring in the men so that you guys can grow together. But I think that what I've discovered on this journey, what I see again and again in other women is that we don't know how important the way that we show up actually is. We don't know how deeply we impact our men by the way we communicate or the way that we respond to how they're providing. And when we can shift those things actually in a way that feels better for us too, right? Like a way that feels more loving and appreciative and respectful, we can really change the way our man shows up as well. But I think it's important that we don't go into it being like, well, he needs to change, so I guess I'm going to try this. Because that's manipulative. That's not going to work. And it's not a formula, right? Like you and I were talking, I think before we started or at the beginning of this conversation. What's important is that like you come to the table, a woman comes to the table and she's like, okay, I see some of my patterns here. I see where I've been disrespectful or where I'm struggling to soften, or I have wounds that need to be healed, and I want to change how I show up as a partner. And when you wholeheartedly go into that, I think it's really beautiful to see the way that the relationship will change, so that you kind of feel seen, safe, and taken care of. Because sometimes, you know, what I see in the culture, sometimes what I see on TikTok and Instagram or whatever is like a lot of blame on the man for the ways he's not showing up, the way he's not seeing her, the way he's not making her feel safe. And yes, he totally has his part. But I think if you don't feel seen in a relationship, it's important to look at, okay, where am I not allowing him to see me? If you don't feel safe, the question could be, where am I not expressing my needs? The things that I need to feel safe, you know? Am I even giving him the opportunity to have me feel seen, safe, and taken care of in this relationship? And that's what we really look at transforming inside of Beloved. Yeah, so it's a coaching program. I run it live. And just to give a little logistics, it's 3 months. And yeah, I'm running it again in 2025, early 2025.
Amazing. Yeah, we're going to put the link for the wait list here so that women can check it out. I mean, it's, for me, this is so powerful when it comes to self-sovereignty, right? And to stepping outside of this victim rhetoric that is so juicy and delicious sometimes, you know, to be in that victim space of like, I don't have to take responsibility for this. Someone else just has to clean it up and then I'll be fine, right? And so to really step into that power that there is a way, I do believe that women have a lot of power. This is not about, you know, inspiring a power struggle. I'm just saying women do have a lot of power in the relationship. The power to alchemize. I mean, that's what we do as women, right? We have wombs. That's what the womb is. The matrix is a space for alchemy. You give a woman some ingredients, she makes a meal. You give a woman some paints and a canvas, she creates a painting, right? The women are always alchemizing. And so when women know that if they have these tools, they can then apply them to what is the home, the relationship, you know, what she's created with the man, things will start to transform. And I don't know how we got into this place of like, if he just did that, then I would be able to be in my feminine, right? I've even had, you know, women in my life say that, where like, if he were to just, you know, make all the plans, then like, I would be able to soften and stop feeling so, you know, the need to be assertive. And I'm like, I don't know if that doesn't feel in my body like it works that way. And so this for me is a much more empowering story, right? Is that I can shift, right? And if we do all these things to shift and we put this in practice and maybe we're hitting a wall, then maybe at that point we see that there is actually some sort of lack of compatibility. But sounds like very often this works. It really does work, even in a situation that might seem totally hopeless, you know?
Yes. Completely, completely. And I think that there is some truth to, yeah, if he just showed up a different way, I could show up a different way. There's truth in that, you know, and I really like the analogy of partnered dance. So, you know, like doing ballroom or tango or something and or salsa. And if you've ever danced with someone who's really good at salsa or tango, it can be really easy to follow, right? Because he's leading and you're following in partner dance. And I know for me, I used to dance a lot and like take salsa classes. And when I dance with the teacher, it'd be so easy. You know, all of a sudden, like moves I didn't know I could do, and he'd be dipping me. And it was so easy to surrender, right? The comparison is like, it's so easy to be my feminine because he's leading really well, you know? But I think the other way around, and actually I did learn this from Omar Pani as well, like the other way is true too. If a woman's really good at following his lead, allowing him to lead and trusting his leadership, she can inspire him to be an even better leader, right? Because if we're always relating to it like, well, if he was just better, then I could be more surrendered. Okay, there might be truth in that. But as long as you think that, you're going to be in a victim state and it's not going to help your relationship. So really what's empowering, what actually works is to be like, okay, so how can I learn my dance part better? How can I be a better follower? How can I be more my femininity? And in that, invite him into, yeah, like being a better leader. And that's what I found again and again. It really does work.
Yeah, it really does work. And I went to one of Om's group seminars in Mexico. And I remember it was mostly couples. I went with my best friend, Kelly, and then everybody else was a bunch of couples. And I remember a lot of the women, you know, when they shared at the, you know, in the very early stages of the seminar said, you know, I just feel like if he could hold me more, I'd be able to soften, right? If he could just step up more, I'd be able to soften. And a lot of these couples had been together for, you know, 20 years, almost 18 years. And I remember him saying, you just like let's just first learn how to touch each other, you know, first, like, let's first learn how to touch each other. And I remember just sitting across, you know, we were partnered, and I mean, Kelly and I were partnered, and then everybody else was with their partner, but just saying, like, asking, how would you like to be touched? And the receiving the person on the receiving end, it's like, I don't know, just like do whatever, right? So it's like the woman's like, just do whatever. And then Om's like, no, be specific. What would feel good? So it's like the woman doesn't even really know how she wants it or what it, you know, what it feels like, but she knows that something has to shift and she's expecting him to read her mind, or she's expecting the man to have all the answers, and she believes he's just choosing not to do it, but she's never actually shown him, you know? And so that was a huge breakthrough for me. It also goes back to Betty Martin's Wheel of Consent, and, you know, and doing the bossy massage, for example, where, you know, you're holding your partner's hand. It's a very similar exercise. And it's like, first, get to the basics of getting clear on what it is that you want, and then set him up for success. And I think it's just an important formula that we forget, because we're kind of sitting there, many of us, with our arms crossed saying, well, once he shows up like this, then I'll be able to, you know, X, Y, Z. And so it's kind of like a standoff.
Yeah, or then we're even going to comparison, like, oh, well, my ex, he knew how to touch me and I didn't have to ask. Talk about a way to just chop your...
It's a partner. Big one. I mean, it's a big one. You know, there's men who are very verbal and, you know, they text, I love you 5 times a day, and they're communicating, and, you know, and then in other ways, you know, around the home, maybe they're not showing up a certain way, you know, and it's like there's so, and then the current partner is showing up around the home in a certain way and never verbalizes, you know, his love, right? And so it's like we could compare or we could see what we're working with and again, try to set them up for success. It's not, it just many of us don't have the blueprint for healthy relating. So if we can learn together, but I think every woman has the capacity to receive and every man can, his hero gene can be inspired, right? As Laura Doyle would say, his hero gene can be inspired by making some shifts.
And I think it comes back to one last thing I want to say about that is it comes back to that phrase of he should just know that, right? That phrase is just a total relationship killer and man killer, I think too. And then it's an easy out. Of like, well, he should just know that I shouldn't have to communicate that. He should just know that I shouldn't have to share my desire. And I'm not, I don't think women do it with any like bad intent. It is really uncomfortable to have to share the desire or have to say, you know, I'd really love it if you told me I look beautiful today. You know, it's so vulnerable. It's so tender to one, like do the inner excavation to find those desires or feelings and then to reveal them. You know, and I think that that's where relationship just gets to be such a personal growth container. It's so power. Yeah, just all your stuff's going to come.
What does a woman do when she has an emotion? You know, she expresses an emotion and her partner says, babe, don't be so dramatic. You're too much sometimes. And she's simply like saying like, I would love to be held or I would love a kiss. And it's like, what it, like I hear that response, you know, I've heard that response and I have friends who've heard that response, you know, what happens when you're with someone who is open, seemingly open in so many ways, but when it comes to receiving expression like that, it's like it kind of fries their system and they don't even know how to respond. So it's something that a man can eventually cultivate with a woman's consistent expression, or is it something that's like, that is just off in a man.
So I think for the most part, it is something that a man can cultivate. And I think, yeah, a truth of a relationship is that you guys are going to grow together. You know, your partner's not going to know how to meet all your needs. You're not going to know how to meet all your partner's needs. But as long as you have two willing partners, you guys can grow together and learn how to meet your needs. So I think it's really possible. And I would say that the first thing to be aware of is when you're communicating your feelings or needs to be able to communicate it in a feminine way. And what I mean by that, there's like different elements of that. But one piece is being able to take personal responsibility for how you feel. So not using phrases like you made me feel or, you know, or communicating with resentment, like kind of how we were talking about earlier, like you never give me hugs, like things like that are going to put your partner into defense mode because you're blaming. So if you can take personal responsibility and just share open-heartedly how you feel, that's ideal. But then to speak to what you said, sometimes it might be a lot for a man's system. Different men respond to that differently. And maybe it'll take some time for him to get there. But if he responds in a way like, oh, you're too much, I would just say kind of go back to that same practice again of like doing the inner cultivation of that moment of like, how do you feel hearing him say that? If you feel sad, see, hearing him say that, share that with him. Oh, I feel sad that hearing you say that. You know, this is something that feels like a need for me in this relationship. You know, just like lovingly and from a place of loving yourself. And because if a man doesn't respond well, it could be so easy to then want to go into attack mode yourself. But if you can keep meeting him with softness and that internal strength, that's where, yeah, you can change the relationship.
Yeah. Sometimes they never learn, right? Sometimes emotions were not welcome in their home growing up and nobody was able to hold their emotions. Let's say like a caregiver wasn't able to presence with them when they were having emotions, or it was like, go to your room, come back when you're calm, right? So there's never space for that emotional holding. So sometimes when their woman is like having an expression, even if it's like minor, like, you know, just a few tears or like even tears of happiness, they're not sure what to do with that, you know?
Yeah. And so I would say make it easy for him to win with you, right? Like try to set him up to win. It's like, oh, when I, this is where you kind of have conversations of like, when I'm crying or like, I just need a hug. I know Matt and I have had conversations about that too. Like over time, you just have conversations kind of like what you need and all of that stuff so that he can actually win with you and know how to navigate those situations that maybe he didn't grow up like automatically.
And I believe it's effective to express those strategies. I call it a strategy, right? Like when I'm crying, I'd love for you to just hold me. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to solve the problem. You don't have to make me stop crying. Just the touch is actually would be great. So like that's maybe a strategy or an approach to express those when there isn't charge. That's a big thing, right? So it's like share that in a time where there is connection seems to be more effective.
I love that. Totally. When there's not charge. And there's a really great book called Love and Respect. I can't remember exactly who wrote it in this moment. Love and Respect. Giving him the respect he needs and the love she deserves or something. I'm not sure. Are you looking it up, Ayla? Yeah. But the point of that book or that one of the points of the book that was really helpful for me is recognizing where men's automatic is not necessarily to be soft and loving in the way that women need. Same way that women's automatic is not necessarily to be respectful in the way that men need. So same way that we need to learn how to be respectful in the way men need, men also need to learn how to kind of soften and be loving in the way that we need. So I know in my relationship, like Matt's automatic sometimes can be to be blunt or to say no. And sometimes that rattles me. And I also love that about him, right? That's like his masculinity that he brings in. I really do appreciate that. And then sometimes it does hurt my feeling. And so then it's my responsibility to like communicate that and let him know that hurt my feelings. And I'd love it if he was a little more gentle in his communication. Like, is he willing to do that? You know, and that's really helped because then he learns how to love me and I learn how to love him. And we have to give each other those codes. Otherwise, we don't know.
Yeah. Have to give each other those codes. Absolutely. I think that's a big piece, the respect piece. A lot of girls and grow up also not saying, you know, women respect men or even like there's this phrase and I hear this a lot. I have a girlfriend, like we both heard similar things growing up and it was like, they're always going to do something to you. There's always going to be a secret. Always be prepared for the worst. Have a, you know, secret bank account that he doesn't know about because at any moment your life could be flipped upside down, right? There's like trauma in the lineage and many lineages and those messages are, if not completely, you know, explicitly communicated, there's like this undertone that's being communicated as we watch our mothers, you know, interact with our fathers and the women, the aunts and things like that in our family. We get this, we download this information, right? And so to unlearn that and to say it's possible to be safe and respected and it's possible to have open communication, it's possible that I could be taken care of and it's possible that everything actually could work out, right? And to respect the man in the process, right? Because we don't realize that having that story in the unconscious running does produce a lot of disrespect towards the man and scrutiny and suspicion and all kinds of things, you know? And most women don't even know they're doing it, right? And so what is like a way that a woman can cultivate respect for a man?
Yeah. Well, firstly, I just want to, and I get comments like that under some of my videos, you know, like, women sharing, like, I was feminine in my relationship and still like he cheated on me or still I was left with the baby. And I'm so sorry for any woman who has experienced that. That's so painful. And it's not, and I don't share any of this for women to overtake responsibility for their relationship. You know, your partner has his own part and he's going to come with his own patterns and traumas and all the rest of that. And I think really though, like you said, with that lineage of trauma, that lineage of fear that we get towards men, we come into relationships in our unhealthy femininity, right? And then we're right back to that peach where it's like either we're not communicating our needs. And I call that the collapsed feminine, where it's like we're collapsed in on ourselves. We're not sharing our needs. We don't know our worth. We're often not taking personal responsibility there either. But the other side is the shielded feminine, where it's like, you're going to betray me, so I'm going to be on guard. I'm not going to let you see my next move. I'm not going to show you my heart because I need to be protected here. The best bet that we have to have healthy relationships that last is having that softness, right? That ability to reveal those fears, even in your relationship. Like, oh my gosh, I do have this lineage of, you know, I saw my dad cheat on my mom and I'm really scared in this relationship. And communicating that with your partner, like letting him in so that he can help, so that he can show up for you. And so that you're not just like on this secret mission to hide from him because that's just going to breed more disconnection in your relationship, you know? And I just agree with what you said. I think it's so possible. And obviously, you know, some people comment like, wait until you're married for 20 years. Like, I know that I have so much more to learn and I'm early on my journey as well. And yeah, but what I've seen, and that's why I have mentors who've been in relationships longer than me as well. It's like, yeah, what I've seen is that there's truth. You just got to keep leaning in and showing your heart and asking for what you want and also not expecting the worst of your partner. Right? Like expecting the best, like knowing that he does love you. He does care for you. He's not going to be perfect, just as you won't either. But yeah, giving some grace to the messiness of relationship as well.
Yeah. And it is a boot camp, you know, it comes with a lot of pleasure and joy and connection. But there's also another element of that because you're just faced with yourself very often. And I feel like it's quite liberating, can be quite liberating to be in a conscious relationship where you're working towards common goals with the other person and you're also nurturing yourself.
Yeah. And one more thing I'd love to say about that is I just remember, to bring it back to my original story, like I just remember throughout my life, you know, when I was really young, I really wanted love. And then when I got older and hurt, I was like, I don't even think that's possible. My parents went through a divorce too. So just seeing that in my house, I just kind of thought that wasn't possible. And then as I started to do my healing, as I started to take personal responsibility for my life and connect to my femininity, heal my relationship with men, like all those pieces, and then met this man who I'm in a relationship with now, I'm so grateful to know that it is possible to have a loving relationship where we get to communicate and where we love each other and where we both lean in and where it's imperfect. You know, it's messy. Sometimes we are triggered and get into fights. And even that, I'm like, wow, because we can get in fights and then we can come back and apologize and then get through to the other side and be even closer. So yeah, I guess maybe a younger version of me didn't need to hear, like, it actually is possible if you do your work and have discernment, especially if you're dating and yeah, if you really lean in, you can have the love that you want that maybe isn't common, but it is possible.
Right. I would say it isn't common, but it is possible. And it does take perseverance and really cultivating that relationship with oneself first and foremost. Yeah. Oh, Kelly, I feel like I could just keep talking to you all day. And I just realized like we've been chatting for quite a while and it's just so wonderful and refreshing to talk to you and to hear all of this and to hear your personal story. I mean, I often believe that the arcs we go through in life lead us to doing God's work, you know, and supporting women through their process. You know, it's really remarkable. So thank you so much for spending the morning with me. And yeah, is there anything that you'd like to close the conversation with? Any tips, any three action steps that you want to leave for inspiration?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the best, whether you fall more on the end of like being collapsed or shielded, you know, on this kind of scale of unhealthy femininity, it's like one of the most powerful things I think we can do as women is just reveal our hearts to our partner, right? Whether there's sadness or fear or even resentment in there, that it's important to stop hiding those things and start showing them like needs and feeling or needs and wants as well. And I think that that's a really significant step towards being more in our healthy femininity and not being passive and getting to be the women that we really, I mean, at least, yeah, the women I work with. And for me, like the women that we aspire to be.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It was so fun to talk.